Hello, and welcome to A History of Japan. Season 10, Episode 15, A Game of Succession. Although the years spanning 1592 through 1598 were not defined by incessant domestic warfare, dramatic coups, or court intrigue, that did not mean that nothing was happening in Japan during the Imjin War. We have already broadly covered some of these events, but they're worth briefly recounting and placing in their proper context. One of Toyotomi Hideyoshi's most remarkable characteristics was his capacity for broad, big-picture planning and execution. He was the driving force behind unification after Nobunaga's death, and I would argue that the other high-ranking retainers like Shibata Katsuie and Maeda Toshiie would not have been able to keep the ruling coalition unified, much less manage to unify the rest of the nation under their authority. Whatever else can be said of him, Toyotomi Hideyoshi was a very charismatic and skilled leader. By 1592, Hideyoshi was around 55 years old. We are not certain of his exact birth date, though it is accepted that he was born around 1537. His personal life had not been without its share of tragedy, as his first son, Tsurumatsu, born in 1588, died while still very young. The tragedy surrounding the offspring of Hideyoshi would unfortunately not end with young Tsurumatsu's death. We discussed previously how Hideyoshi accepted his nephew Toyotomi Hidetsugu as his heir, how Hidetsugu was named to the post of Kampaku in 1585, and how their relationship deteriorated after the birth of Hideyoshi's son in 1593. Hidetsugu committed seppuku and his entire family was killed in 1595, save for a few of Hidetsugu's infant granddaughters, who were promptly adopted by other clans. I would contend that Hidetsugu was probably the Toyotomi clan's last best hope for maintaining their authority across generations, and that by ordering his death, Hideyoshi was setting fire to his own legacy. As a side note, while there was no significant evidence that Hidetsugu was plotting against Hideyoshi, I discovered that the diaries of visiting Jesuits do confirm that his nickname of the Killing Regent was deserved. According to them, Hidetsugu loved killing people, which leads me to believe that not all of the rumors about his bloodlust were false. Some of the Taiko's advisors believed that his restrictive policies regarding land survey, sword hunting, and restriction of movement were an impending threat to long-term national security. In his book, A History of Japan 1334 to 1615, George Sansom notes that a large portion of Nobunaga's original following were jizamurai, rural smallholding samurai, who joined themselves to the cause of unification in hopes of rewards and confirmation of their domains. This class of samurai stood to lose the most under Hideyoshi's survey tax, as the increased accountability meant that what little they had would be taxed to the hilt, with less left over for themselves afterward. While some of these had, through their bold deeds, been granted larger domains, the wealth produced by these domains would now be less than they expected. The other primary group who felt the pinch of Hideyoshi's authority were the previously prosperous peasants of independent villages, who had been developing remarkable forms of self-governance against the chaotic backdrop of Sengoku Jidai. The land survey resulted in increased taxation, which fell most heavily on the peasant farmer population. These regressive taxes combined with the restriction of movement forced them to choose between a lifetime of subservience or a likely short stint as a fugitive living on what little sustenance might be found in the wilderness. While popular Japanese history usually casts national unification as a bright light at the end of the dark tunnel of chaotic warfare, it is worth noting that a significant portion of the population in the 1590s was extremely discontented. However, whether by design or by sheer luck, Hideyoshi's policies worked hand-in-hand to prevent any larger cohesion from forming amid like-minded groups around the nation. The peasant farmers were kept busy working the land to its maximum capacity and unable to communicate or coordinate with other like-minded groups in neighboring regions. Later Japanese historians would postulate that part of Hideyoshi's motivation for invading the Chosun kingdom was to provide opportunity for discontented Jizamurai to win more land through brave deeds. While this does not by itself fully explain the ill-fated invasion, it was likely part of Hideyoshi's political calculus. Discontented Jizamurai who were busy adventuring on a foreign shore could not coordinate with discontented peasants at home. It is worth noting that some groups in Japan were openly and vocally opposed to the invasion of Korea. They weren't exactly peace-loving pacifists, but the influential merchant houses of Sakai tried to advise against the adventure, arguing that opening new trade markets in Spanish and Portuguese holdings in Asia would be far more profitable and beneficial. Regarding whether the Imjin War was a cynical ploy to squash potential large-scale discontent or an earnest attempt at annexation on the part of Hideyoshi, I believe that an argument can be made that it was both. Hideyoshi was inspired in this endeavor in part by the fact that Nobunaga spoke of conquering China as a future goal. In less than 10 years, Hideyoshi had accomplished national unification. How much more difficult could it be to conquer China? And if some malcontents dissatisfied with the new status quo lost their lives in the effort, all the better. While today it is easy to see that a nation with the resources, population, and military capability of feudal Japan would not likely be capable of conquering Ming China, a nation with over 150 million residents, an army of nearly 2 million, and the largest economy of any nation in the world, this was far less obvious during Hideyoshi's time. You may recall that Konishi Yukinaga, the invasion's primary leader in the field, who had actually traveled enough to have a better idea of the size and capabilities of Ming China, did everything in his power to try and prevent the disastrous effort from coming to pass. Early in the invasion, October of 1592 to be specific, the Toyotomi family suffered the first of many tragedies of this era when Toyotomi Hidekatsu, the younger brother of Hidetsugu, died of illness on Gaji Island in Korea. After the tragic fates of Hidetsugu and his entire family in 1595, Hideyoshi seems to have perceived the weakened position of his clan. He summoned the most powerful daimyo in the nation along with the lesser daimyo who served in his government to a gathering at which they were made to sign an oath swearing that they would obey his son Hideyori, who was 2 at the time, when he became an adult and took up his father's mantle, and that they would continue to obey Hideyoshi while he lived. They all signed without hesitation, but when young Hideyori was officially made the Kampaku regent the following year, when he was 3, the powerful barons were once more summoned and made to sign the oath again. In fact, most of Hideyoshi's extreme political actions toward the end of his life make sense if we assume that he undertook them in order to solidify his own son's succession and remove any would-be rivals. The slaughter of Hidetsugu's entire family, while still a shocking and objectively horrific event, is undergirded by a certain grim logic that if his nephew is gone and all of his children and family members gone, there would be no rival claimant to rob young Hideyori of his birthright. As the invasions of Korea began, Hideyoshi steadily lost interest in most domestic affairs and left day-to-day governance to his subordinates, like the Gobugyo, or five commissioners. While some of the original ministers would go fight in Korea, they left behind capable deputies to tend to their duties. He also relied more heavily on his nephew Hidetsugu, but shortly after his death in 1595, Hideyoshi saw the wisdom in forming a new administrative body capable of enforcing his young son's claim to supremacy and meeting the daily needs of the state. The ruling-slash-regency body which he created was known as Go Tairo, or the Council of Five Elders. Members of this council were primarily the most powerful landowners in the nation, daimyo who controlled vast domains and were accustomed to big-picture governance. It's worth noting that Hideyoshi had found it necessary to appoint ranking samurai as special messengers to pass his communications with the various smaller daimyo around the nation, but generally communicated directly with those daimyo whose domains spanned several provinces and whose yield were worth hundreds of thousands or sometimes millions of koku. For example, when issuing orders for his sword hunt, he sent these special messengers called toritsugi to issue the order directly to the smaller daimyo, but did not even bother directly issuing the order to those who controlled more vast domains because it was assumed that they would perform this duty throughout all their lands without needing to be given a direct order. The members of this council of elders were ranked from the most prosperous domains to the least: Tokugawa Ieyasu, Mori Terumoto, Uesugi Kagekatsu, Maeda Toshiie, and Ukita Hideie. I think we are familiar enough by now with Tokugawa Ieyasu, who governed the 2.5 million koku domain spanning Kanto, and Mori Terumoto, who governed the 1.2 million koku domain in western Chugoku, to set them aside for the moment. Uesugi Kagekatsu, whose domain in Dewa province had an annual yield of 1.2 million koku, had initially fought against Oda Nobunaga during his conquests. After Nobunaga's death and after suffering a clan-splitting civil war against his brother, Kagekatsu had assisted Hideyoshi at the Battle of Shizugatake and would continue providing support at the Battle of Komaki Nagakute, as well as the Siege of Odawara. Maeda Toshiie, who governed the 800,000 koku Kanazawa domain in Kaga province in northern Kansai, was a longtime veteran whose career began with Oda Nobunaga and who had become one of Nobunaga's, and later Hideyoshi's, most competent and trusted generals. Toshiie had initially sided with Shibata Katsuiye during his dispute with Hideyoshi, but he changed sides and supported Hideyoshi at the Battle of Shizugatake. Lastly, there was Ukita Hideie, who governed a 500,000 koku domain spanning Bizen and Mimasaka provinces in eastern Chugoku. During Hideyoshi's invasion of Chugoku on behalf of Oda Nobunaga, the Ukita clan had submitted to Nobunaga's rule, and Hideie participated in the Shikoku, Kyushu, and Odawara campaigns. He also served as a leader of the second invasion of Korea in 1597, but returned to Japan in 1598 to serve on the Gotairo when one of their members died. The member who died, who is usually left off the roster by historians, was Kobayakawa Takakage, who governed the 510,000 koku Okayama domain in western Chugoku. The third son of Mori Motonari, he had been adopted by the Kobayakawa clan. Because he died in 1597, he was replaced by Ukita Hideie. The total amount of koku controlled by the Council of Elders was roughly equivalent to one-third of the total farming output of the entire nation. Their power was not determined solely by their wealth, however, and it is no coincidence that the wealthier among the elders were daimyos like Tokugawa Ieyasu and Mori Terumoto, whose domains were strategically further from Kansai than Maeda Toshiie and Ukita Hideie. While Hideyoshi needed the support of great and powerful barons, he had to maintain some kind of balance to curtail dangerous ambitions. He tried to ensure that all the powerful daimyo included in the Gotairo had more to gain by working together than might be lost in a rash coup. There is good reason to believe that among all the Council of Five Elders, Hideyoshi most mistrusted Tokugawa Ieyasu. The only daimyo in the nation to face Hideyoshi and not lose, Ieyasu was known to be a man of both ambition and ability, a dangerous combination in a subordinate during this era. Hideyoshi's previous attempt to disempower him had certainly worked for a time. Abandoning his holdings in Chubu for the eight incredibly productive provinces of Kanto was a gamble all around, and for a time Ieyasu was not fully in control of the fertile southeastern region. Hostile local samurai loyal to the disempowered Hojo made his life difficult, to be sure. However, displaying his usual combination of charm, strategy, and political acuity, he gradually expanded his influence over the entrenched authorities of the region through integration, intimidation, and patience. By the time he was placed on the Council of Five Elders, the region of Kanto was comfortably in his grasp and under control. Hideyoshi took measures to bring the nation's daimyo more directly under his authority. In an edict he issued in 1595, he declared that all marriages between daimyo houses must be approved beforehand, that they were forbidden from forming new alliances with one another, that all charges of misdeeds be thoroughly investigated, and that most daimyo were forbidden from traveling via a palanquin. The Council of Five Elders were allowed to use palanquins, and any daimyo who was seriously ill was also given an exception. Although missionaries had been officially banned from Japanese soil in 1587, many continued to operate in secret and minister to secret Christian communities, especially on Kyushu. However, in October of 1596, a Manila galleon named the San Felipe drifted to the shores of Tosa Province on Shikoku. The ship had embarked from Manila and was traveling towards Acapulco when it became damaged by repeated typhoons which destroyed its masts. The ship's crew were familiar with Japan and pleaded with their captain to try and make for the port of Nagasaki, a town commonly used for Nanban trade, where they were sure to find a warm welcome. The captain, however, insisted on landing at Tosa, which was the last remaining province in the Chosokabe clan's domain. Chosokabe Motochika ordered his navy to escort the damaged ship to the Tosa port town of Kochi, where the great treasure ship hit a sandbar and wrecked. Motochika proceeded to seize its cargo for himself, telling the protesting captain that according to Japanese laws, the cargoes of shipwrecks belonged to the daimyo upon whose land the wreck had occurred. When the captain continued his protestations, Motochika suggested he take his protests directly to Toyotomi Hideyoshi in Kyoto. As you may have guessed, Motochika was not exactly a legal scholar, nor was he really trying to help the crew of the San Felipe find justice. They traveled to Osaka and met with Motochika's friend, a commissioner of the Gobu-gyo, Mashita Nagamori. Nagamori discussed the matter with the Spanish crew at length, while also asking them many questions about their home nation and various political developments there. Through the course of their conversation, Nagamori was shown a map of the world, and the crew helpfully guided him through the massive Spanish and Portuguese empires of the time. During their conversation, some of the crew also helpfully explained how the arrival of Roman Catholic missionaries was generally the first step in a process of conversion, conflict, conquest, and subjugation, especially how the local converts would assist the conquistadors in the invasions. Nagamori was also very surprised and even skeptical when they informed him that the nations of Spain and Portugal shared the same king. No doubt everyone had a good time chatting, but the crew of the San Felipe probably didn't realize what dire consequences would result from their loose talk. The captain himself was informed that Hideyoshi considered him a pirate and had ordered his execution, but that the sentence had been suspended in favor of graciously allowing them to leave. The captain and crew of the San Felipe departed from Japan, and every bit of their cargo, valued at 600,000 pesos, was used to fund the ongoing war with Korea and distributed as gifts to various daimyo, and even to the emperor. The San Felipe incident, as it would be called, served to confirm Hideyoshi's worst fears about Christianity in Japan. Nagamori passed his information along, including the massive size of the Portuguese and Spanish empires, and how both kingdoms were ruled by the same man. Roman Catholicism, a foreign religion, had gone from being a minor annoyance to a full-fledged existential threat to Japan's sovereignty. The port city of Nagasaki, located on the northwestern end of Kyushu, was targeted as the primary vector of foreign infection. Indeed, the citizens of Nagasaki had adopted many European fashions, customs, and behaviors, so much so that contemporary Europeans often wrote in their journals about how much it felt like home. After the crew of the San Felipe departed, Toyotomi Hideyoshi ordered the arrest of 26 known Roman Catholics in Nagasaki, 17 of whom were Japanese. They were tortured, disfigured, and put on display in many villages throughout the nation in early 1597. In February of 1597, the 26 were brought back to Nagasaki and crucified on a nearby hill overlooking the city. As they hung on their crosses, they were stabbed repeatedly with spears until they were dead. Known as the 26 Martyrs of Japan, they were later declared as saints in the Roman Catholic Church after going through the usual long path from beatification to canonization. The official day set aside to commemorate their sacrifice in the Roman Catholic calendar is February 6th. There is a monument dedicated to their memory in Nagasaki today, and a picture of that monument can be found on today's supplemental blog post. The execution of the 26 martyrs was the beginning of the end for Roman Catholicism in feudal Japan. Occasional persecutions followed, some of them lethal, which were a stark reversal from the previous policy of general tolerance. In a show of solidarity with the Taiko, many Christian daimyo renounced their faith. There were a few, however, who valued their faith more than their standing in Hideyoshi's government. Takayama Shigetomo was a longtime supporter of Nobunaga and Hideyoshi, having fought at the siege of Ishiyama Honganji, the Battle of Yamazaki, the Battle of Shizugatake, and in the Kyushu campaign. He was one of Hideyoshi's most reliable and trustworthy lieutenants, but he had converted to Roman Catholicism as a boy when his father likewise accepted the faith. His domains were especially hostile to Buddhism, and he arranged for their temples and monasteries to be destroyed and Catholic churches built in their place. When asked whether he was prepared to renounce his faith to maintain good relations with Hideyoshi, he replied that he would rather give up all his land and everything he owned. Shigetomo had already suffered on behalf of his faith, having been removed from his post in 1587 after Hideyoshi's expulsion edict. His lands were confiscated and he lived under the protection of Maeda Toshiie, one of the Council of Five Elders, who sheltered him from Hideyoshi's wrath. Although Takayama Shigetomo was his name, he is more commonly referred to as Takayama Ukon, but Ukon was a title. He is also commonly called Dom Justo Takayama, as Justo was the Christian name he received at his baptism. In addition to sheltering Takayama Shigetomo, Maeda Toshiie also served as a cooler head among the Council of Five Elders, frequently resolving disputes between other elders as they arose, and making sure that they followed the Taiko's commands just as they had sworn they would do. He was a supremely influential retainer who had supported Nobunaga since the early days of his succession dispute. However, in 1598, he was 60 years old, and already in failing health. Toyotomi Hideyoshi died on September 18, 1598. With his passing, I will share with you the second part of the poem I mentioned previously after the death of Nobunaga. Nobunaga pounded the rice. Hideyoshi kneaded the dough. In a few episodes, we will learn the third and final verse to that poem about the unification of feudal Japan. The most pressing matter in the wake of his death for the Regency Council was to safely withdraw their warriors from Korea while keeping the Taiko's death a secret so that their enemies on the continent would not be emboldened. However, once the withdrawal had been accomplished in early 1599, the question of how the Taiko's final wishes would be interpreted took center stage. For a time, Maeda Toshiie helped prevent minor disputes among young Hideyori's retainers from blossoming into armed conflict. However, in late April of 1599, Maeda Toshiie passed away, leaving the remaining four elders to find their own solutions in their own way. Next time, we will discuss the final years of the Azuchi Momoyama period, as two factions would emerge in the wake of Maeda Toshiie's death and would fight one of the most dramatic, consequential, and decisive battles in Japanese history. Until then, thank you for listening. If you would like access to exclusive bonus episodes, as well as ad-free versions of the regular episodes, please consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/ahistoryofjapan.